Translation, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 10, Text 1. The great sage Maitreya said, "My dear Vidura, thereafter Dhruva Maharaj married the daughter of Prajapati Shishumara, whose name was Brahmi, and two sons named Kalpa and Vatsara were born of her." Purport, it appears that Dhruva Maharaj married after being installed on the throne of his father and after the departure of his father to the forest for self-realization. It is very important to note in this connection that since Maharaj Uttanapada was greatly affectionate toward his son, and since it is the duty of a father to get his sons and daughters married as quickly as possible, why did he not get his son married before he left home? The answer is that Maharaj Uttanapada was a Rajarshi, saintly king. Although he was busy in his political affairs and duties of government management, he was very anxious for self-realization. Therefore, as soon as his son Dhruva Maharaj was quite worthy to take charge of the government, he took this opportunity to leave home, just like his son, who without fear left home for self-realization, even at the age of 5 years. These are rare instances from which we can see that the importance of spiritual realization is above all other important work. Maharaj Uttanapada knew very well that to get his son Dhruva Maharaj married was not so important that it should take preference to his going away to the forest for self-realization. In the purport here, Srila Prabhupada points out that this is an instance, Maharaj Uttanapada's leaving home before getting his son married. This is an instance of Bhagavad Dharma, Bhagavad Dharma taking precedence over Sadharan Dharma or Lokik Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means actual dharma, the actual occupation of the living being, which is in relationship to Bhagavan. Therefore it's called Bhagavat Dharma, that is actual dharma. So this here takes precedence over Sadharan Dharma. Sadharan means ordinary, which can also be called Lokik Dharma. Lokik means of this world. So actually, ordinary should be Bhagavad Dharma, but because we are in this world, we take this world, the standards and this world and its standards to be ordinary. But actually, real Dharma is Bhagavad Dharma. In one sense, there's no need to call Bhagavad Dharma Bhagavad Dharma. It could be just called Dharma. But because dharma means Bhagavad Dharma. But because in this world dharma is seen or considered to be something else, therefore it's called Bhagavad Dharma to distinguish it. Just like, for instance, there is the common term Sadguru, which means a proper guru, or a good guru. But if he's not bona fide or not good, then he can't be a guru. But because there are so many bogus people in the name of gurus, therefore sometimes Sadguru is said to mean a real guru. And almost all of those who are called bogus also. So cheating is rife in this world. So actually dharma, although it's so important, it, in one sense, it's a kind of cheating. Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamayaham. Whenever there is a decline, a serious decline in dharma in this way, Krishna says, come to re-establish that kills the rascals. Or destroys them. Rascals means those who are against dharma. But what is dharma in this world? Dharma is what, it's Krishna's version of what devotees in ISKCON nowadays like to refer to as bridge preaching. That means that people are engaged in various activities to make them human beings, because human being minus dharma is not a human. Dharma hitesham adhiko vishesham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. Dharma is the special prerogative of human life. Therefore, a human being who does not observe dharma is an animal, because ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanya maitat pashubhya naranam. Human beings and animals both eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So, if a human being only eats, sleeps, mates, and defends, and doesn't practice dharma, then he's just an animal. So dharma means following the rules and regulations given in the shastra for regulating human life. Specifically, that takes place within the varnashram system of brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, shudras, brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. So this system is often disparaged as the caste system. Disparaged? It means spoken of badly. As the caste system, the original varnashram system declines into the exploitive caste system when it's not properly regulated or properly practiced. But the original system is the best system for regulating people in this world, so that they may advance toward the platform of actual dharma, which is Bhagavat dharma. So it's a kind of cheating, or in as much as it's so much stress that it should be followed. Bhagavan himself stresses that it should be followed, but it's not in and of itself the aim. Simply to follow worldly dharma is not in and of itself the aim. Dharma, the first the first or the primary benefit of observing dharma is that one is saved from grossly sinful life, and one lives life in an organized, regulated manner. But that in and of itself is not the goal. The goal is to come to the platform of understanding our actual purpose, because whatever position one may have within varnashram dharma, one may be a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, whatever. That is a temporary role, that is not our actual role. So dharma is fulfilled when one comes to the platform of self-realization. So within the varnashram system, there is much praise that one should associate with saintly people who will give one the knowledge by which one can transcend the varnashram system. So duties within varnashram should be followed, otherwise chaos ensues. For instance, it is an important duty of the father is to see that his children are married. And the children, they don't have any choice in this matter. This was the system in India until recently. They may have, in rare cases, in the Svayamvar of the young girl of the Kshatriya family, she can select her husband. From among Kshatriya princes, she may select her husband, but that will be based on a trial of skill. Just like for Draupadi, the trial was in her Swayamvar, who can shoot the fish, which is behind a revolving wheel with spokes, and looking down, in not even directly looking at the fish, one has to fire the arrow looking at the reflection in water, so it seems almost impossible. It was made, it was set up so that only Arjuna could do it. That was the idea. So Arjuna, that's believed to be dead, but in the hope that he might still be alive, Drupada arranged this. Of course, Karna marched in, and he also claimed to be able to do it, but he was disallowed due to not being a Kshatriya. Of course, Arjuna was at that time posing as a Brahmana. Anyway, the point here is that one is the parents, they have fixed the marriage, and the children have no say in it. Who you get married to? This is it. That's it. Finished. And people think, well, that's horrible. You know, you have to live with someone you don't even know, and it might not work out. But traditionally in India, the marriages did work out, certainly much better than they do at the present time, where it's based on this love, bogus. So, Maharaj Uttanapada, in most responsible position as a Kshatriya, he is supposed to protect the citizens. He's also supposed to protect Dharma. Dharma Rakshati Rakshataha. Those who protect Dharma, they are protected by Dharma. But we see here that he is breaking an important rule of Dharma. And one thing about a Kshatriya is that everything he does is seen by everybody. What he does with his wives, that may be in private, but otherwise he's a very public person. So if he just leaves home without marrying his son, then people can see, and it may look very bad. That why has he done that? He's neglected a major duty. We see that, for instance, shortly after marrying, it was only shortly after marrying, after Lord Ram married, that Dasharath, his father, thought, well, let's put him on the throne. I'll retire, Dasharath thought. Because the marriage comes before the ascent to the throne, generally. Although it may be that in some cases that system is there, or was there throughout the world, that if the father dies early and the child is young, they may officially be put on the throne, but the kingdom will be administered by someone else until the boy is old enough. And often the boy at the age of 14, 15, 16, they would actually take charge, and until that time some regent would do the job, just like Dhritarashtra. He did it in the absence of Pandu, and when the Pandava princes were young. So, Uttanapada, he left home, even though his son wasn't married. He neglected this duty, which doesn't look good, it may say, but he did it for a higher purpose, which was to pursue self-realization. This should not be misunderstood. That because, as Srila Prabhupada says here, this is a rare case. It's not to be imitated. Someone on a very high platform may perform some activity for the sake of self-realization. But that should not be imitated by others. The danger is there, that someone will say, well, you see, Uttanapada, he left home without marrying his son, so I'll leave home without marrying my sons. But then if one is not able to, or if one is not as serious as Uttanapada in pursuing self-realization, if he just leaves home without marrying his sons or daughters, just because he's an irresponsible bum and he just wants to avoid the trouble, then that's not proper. Then he becomes, such a person becomes punishable by the laws of nature for doing that. Srila Prabhupada also left home with his one daughter unmarried, and she never married, which in Srila Prabhupada, as we've learned from Srila Prabhupada, this is not at all proper. But Prabhupada did so for the sake of self-realization. It's not for everyone. Ramanuja, his wife was young. He left her for the sake of taking sannyas. But see what he did after taking sannyas. So there are many examples. This Raghavendra Tirtha in South India, he's also he took sannyas. His wife was so upset. He was a young man. It means his wife was also, and she was so upset she jumped in a well and died. She committed suicide. Ramanuja delivered her ghost. Raghavendra, he was so powerful. He was able to do that. This Sridhar Swami, who made the commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, his wife died. She was young. And then he had a young son, and he was thinking, well, actually, I could have taken sannyas, but I have this young son. But then he saw one baby lizard just born and immediately captured one insect to eat. So then he thought, well, God is providing for the baby lizard, so I can provide for my baby boy also, and he left and took sannyas. But that's not encouraged for everybody. If one can actually do something, except Prabhupada did that also. He got people married and then unmarried. In the beginning he was encouraging household devotees to preach as householders. After some time he wanted some sannyasis, and he gave sannyas to young men. So these are all considerations. Prabhupada said this is a rare case, Uttanapada. Personally, I'm more in favor that we establish the norm and then we make the rare cases, rather than make the rare case the norm. It's very easy to say that, well, we're doing everything for Krishna and just neglect to follow our responsibilities and our duties. In the modern world, it's thought that, well, if you're married and you don't like your spouse, then, well, you just dump them and get another one. But that's not permitted in Vedic culture, just to dump one and get another one. In Vedic culture, a man can marry again. That's not allowed in modern society. But he doesn't leave the first or second or third wives. A woman, she marries, that's it, finished. That's it for life. this should be established rather than in the name of self. We may think, well, it's better for self-realization. I just get another wife or get another husband. But it creates chaos in society, so that should not be encouraged. As you can see, I brought my laptop here. I have a few questions which have been sent to me, which I'll take the opportunity of answering. They actually fall within this category. One question is there about girls' education. Is it necessary? How far should it be? Well, it all falls in the general category of how society should be organized. At the present time, society is chaotic. Srila Prabhupada wanted to re-establish Varnashram Dharma. And many of the things he said about this, people in the modern age would consider that barbaric, wrong in all respects, unfair. But then we see that modern society, it's not really doing that well. Modern society has made so many adjustments according to the recommendations of psychologists and sociologists they've decided that, well, we know how to organize society better than previously was, but the result is not very good. The result is a big mess. So, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to re-establish Varnashram. It's a big task to do so. We may not be able to do that overnight, but we should at least know what the principle is and act on that as far as possible. So, as far as girls' education, Srila Prabhupada said that the daughters of his disciples, they do not need so much education. Actually, he didn't want even for the sons education. Definitely not the modern system. Go to school and learn how to be a demon. That he didn't want. But for the girls, he said because the position of women in Varnashram society is to serve their husbands, serve the elders in the family, to serve guests, and the natural position for a woman, the body is meant for giving birth to children, which somehow or other in the modern age that seems to have been overlooked. A major point has been overlooked for all their psychology and sociology and this and that. The fact that they have to spend a lot of their time looking after children, being pregnant. A normal thing is for women to have many children. Means they're not going to have a career as such. So there's no need for big education, and that's actually diverting them from the dharma, stri dharma, the role of a woman, which is to have children and look after them. Of course, the men also look after, but principally the women. And to train them. The first guru is the mother. So, as far as education is concerned, everyone should be educated in Bhagavad Dharma. But for that, it doesn't require going to school for years and years and years to learn all kinds of things which you forget. Who remembers 10% of what they learned at school? Anyone? I mean, reading and writing? That you remember, maybe. But mostly what you learn is forgotten. So, education for girls, yes, at home. This was Prabhupada's idea. They can learn to read and write and study Prabhupada's books. And they should learn to be very chaste and faithful to whoever their future husband will be. That they get from, you'll learn from hearing Ramayana, the instructions of Anasuya to Sita, for instance. Housework, all these things. And if their husband is learned, they'll also become learned. That's how it works, because the husband is supposed to teach the wife what he learns in the Gurukul. So that's what Prabhupada suggested. Or not suggested, but he said should be done. In the modern age, in different countries, there are different laws. I believe in Slovenia, the law is that everyone has to go to school, isn't it? And it's such nonsense that someone's been farming, their parents have been farming the land, their grandparents have farmed the same land, their great-grandparents farmed the same land, but now if they want to farm it, they have to come into the city and get a degree in agriculture, then only they can farm it. So, and then they have to learn all these demoniac methods of spraying and poisoning the land. So, it's a demoniac society, but in traditional society, I've seen myself. I once, in Sri Rangam, I was invited to take lunch in the home of one Rigvedi Brahmana, who has a Gurukul there. And we went a little early, and then the boys, they were asked to chant, and they were forgetting some of the some of the verses. And the mother, that means the wife of the guru there, she was helping them out with the verses. Because she heard them for so many years, she knew all. She knew the same as the. She knew all the verses. The generation after generation heard. And she must have heard them in her childhood, and then she heard them again from her husband again. So she knew them also. So education, yes, but not in the manner that. Not what in the modern age is called education. So that's in brief. Then another question relating to one's situation in life is, says, someone asked a question, can homosexuals serve in ISKCON? Can they worship deities? They can, but there's no need to advertise that I'm a homosexual. It's illicit sex is forbidden. Illicit sex means within marriage for the purpose of procreation. Anything else but that is illicit. So, a homosexual activity is illicit sex. If one has that inclination, one cannot indulge it. There's no way to indulge it in Krishna consciousness. If the heterosexual inclination can be indulged through marriage. The homosexual inclinations, there's no way to indulge it. So, can they live in a temple? It can be very difficult because if you're attracted to the same sex and you're living in an ashram, then there's liable to be problems. So, it's a special case, you could say. It's becoming more and more common in the modern world due to the promotion of lust in the modern world. This is described in the Vallabhacharya, refers to the homosexual inclination as atikama, excessive lust. So again, in the modern age, this wouldn't be considered very proper to say such things. It's not considered politically correct to say such things. But the modern age is a mess and a disaster. And our devotees should be very clear what are the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, what are the teachings of Shastra. They're not, in many ways, they're not harmonizable. What's the word? They're not possible to harmonize with those of modern society, which is basically demoniac. However nice people may look, and however sophisticatedly or apparently culturedly they may speak and behave, the modern society is demoniac because it promotes lust, greed, anger, exploitation. So, homosexuals can take part in Krishna consciousness, but because they have that inclination, it may be very. It's probably best they don't live in ashrams unless they're very self-controlled. Then another question I have is, there's a quote from Bhagavatam, how brahmacharis shouldn't wear garlands. So can the question is, can brahmacharis wear prasad garlands? They can do, but not in a spirit of decorating themselves to be attractive to others, but as a recognition of the Lord's mercy, they may accept prasad like this. They may also, because it is a decoration, they may also not want to do so publicly. Or just like Srila Prabhupada states that Mahaprasadam, referring to the eatable items, food, that should be offered to the grihastas, not to the brahmacharis and sannyasis. So, because that's a luxurious item, enjoyable item, or it tends to be taken as an enjoyable item. So in the renounced order of life, one should, or brahmacharis are also supposed to practice austerities. What is that? Tapasyena, brahmacharyena, these two activities are grouped together. Austerity and brahmacharya. So they may not... It looks inappropriate for a brahmachari to be very nicely dressed with very, you know, very fancy clothes and maybe very nicely oiled shika and scented body. It's inappropriate. So a brahmachari may wear prasadam garlands, but to honor that prasad of the Lord, the garland that has been offered to the Lord, but not with the spirit of decorating his body. All right, I'll finish there. Any questions, please? Yes, you have a question. You don't have to say that every time. It's like a ritual. Thank you for the wonderful lecture. And it's all right. I'm doing my duty by speaking. You're doing your duty by listening. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he remarried. Good thing he did, because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was a result of that. Apparent contradictions. Well, it's in English. There's a saying: not what is that? Not every shoe fits everyone. Something I can't remember. Not every size fits everyone. There's not a stereotype. Different people act in different ways according to time, place, circumstance, order of guru, present necessity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur remarried. He had children. He didn't drop them or renounce them. So married or unmarried, if we could do even 1/1,000,000th of the service that Bhaktivinoda Thakur did, our life would be glorious beyond anyone's imagination. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is more than millions of sannyasis. And even today... so many sannyasis are coming and bowing down before Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which in the Varnashram system, sannyasi doesn't bow before a householder, but sannyasi who doesn't bow before Bhaktivinoda Thakur is simply a rascal. Yeah, anything else? Yeah.
Archika mentioned that
enjoyable and luxurious items should not be offered to brahmacharis and even sannyasis. Yeah, Prabhupada writes this in the in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
In the case of the
disciples, they like to bring nice food. They like to bring nice food to the sannyasi, and the sannyasi should not take them. Or he should try to restrict that. Srila Prabhupada wrote about this in a letter that, in various letters he wrote that sannyasis may take Mahaprasad, but what did he say? Not to excess, something like this. He quoted in the Nectar of Instruction from this. Bairagi bhai gramya kata na bolibe jabe milibe ane. Bhalo na khaibe or bhalo na paribe. Those who are renounced, they should not, when they meet others, they shouldn't talk all nonsense. And they shouldn't eat well or dress well. So that's the general rule. And about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taking prasad, but on principle he was avoiding. We'll find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was offered good food, he'd say, no, no, I'm a sannyasi, I can't take it. Just give me some very simple food. And then the devotees, generally by tricks, they would give the opulent items. So, again, we see what to do. Then again, the guru may accept various items which are offered with love by the disciple. That he may also do.
I heard in one lecture that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj had a custom, like in Bhakti Bazar temple in Kolkata, that whenever some visiting sannyasi would come, first he had to go to find someone, senior vihasa, and pay obeisances to him.
Yeah, that's stated in Bhaktisiddhanta, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. That Kunja Bihari was the organizer of the whole institution. He was the Mutrakhak, which means, more or less means temple president in ISKCON language, and in Calcutta at the Gauriya Mutt there. So sannyasis, they were, the etiquette established by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was that they should offer obeisance to Kunja Bihari, who was a householder. That was the etiquette established. He was senior. I also always used to do, when I met Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers who are married, I'd always... There was a sannyasi, I'd always offer obeisance, and they were somewhat surprised. Or even I'm much younger than them, but they thought the sannyasi shouldn't offer obeisance to them. But I'd say to them, in spiritual consideration, you're senior to me, so I have to offer obeisance. Like that. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.